At Wesley Biblical Seminary, we believe God is raising up a movement across our nation and around the world who hold fast to the inerrancy of Scripture and the hope of holiness. We do this through bachelor's, master's, and doctoral degrees, certificate programs, and even training for lay people. So whatever your next step is in being equipped for ministry, we're here for you. And if you believe these are the kind of pastors we need leading churches in the future, we invite you to think about giving to Wesley Biblical Seminary. Learn more about us at wbs.edu.
Welcome to Today's Issues, offering a Christian response to the issues of the day. Here's your host, Tim Wildman, president of the American Family Association.
"24 more days to buy your Christmas gifts." Welcome, everybody, to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. I'm Tim Wildman with Ed Vitagliano. Did you know this, Ed?
I did, and it's 24 more days to have Christmas gifts bought for me, for any of my family members who are listening.
That's the spirit, Ed. That's the spirit. Good morning, Fred Jackson.
Good morning to you.
December the 1st, 2025, that's today, so we got 24 more days until Christmas Day, and it looks like to me, Fred, it's going to be a pretty cold, bitter winter, if early indications are here.
It's been ugly the last several days. Chicago got 9 inches of snow so far.
That'll teach them.
And well, you talk about carjackings are way down.
And there's more to come in Chicago. And then it's going to be down around +1, +2 degrees. Mm-hmm. If you don't have to go to Chicago, don't. The flight cancellations are just, and cancellations and delays, and now up in the Northeast, New York, Boston, they're about to be hit with this bad weather too.
Yeah.
And if you live further south, you're getting ice.
Yeah.
It's just really ugly.
Well, I'm hoping this will build momentum for my movement to pass legislation to ban winter. This has been a big campaign issue that I've looked for somebody to latch on to.
Yeah.
Well,
Congress is all about getting things done, Tim. I mean, I think you got it. You get the ball in the right court.
It just seems to me like this ought to be a nonpartisan issue. I mean, taking, you know, banning extreme cold weather. I was watching of course, everybody knows I'm a college football fan. I do enjoy watching Saturdays. And I was watching some of the games from the North, the Midwest, and the Ohio State Michigan game, the snow started. And then Minnesota and Wisconsin.
Mm-hmm. I do like watching snow during a football game.
It's fun, isn't it? Watching them slip sliding.
Yeah.
watching guys slip sliding all over.
But we can't even get Congress to get rid of daylight savings time. How are they going to
get rid of winter?
Yeah.
I know. But anyway, it is a early storm system that's taking about a third of the country being affected, maybe, in terms of snow and ice.
Having lived in the North, it is. You're prepared for winter,
right?
But what gets discouraging is when it starts so early.
Yeah.
Thanksgiving. You know,
it's going to stretch for, you got another 6 months ahead of you with this stuff.
Hey, we're going to talk to Ray Pritchard. Ray on tomorrow? Okay. Ray Pritchard.
Uh-huh.
You know what Ray did?
Yes, I do.
He dealt with winter this way.
We mocked him last week when he was on.
Okay, so he
snowbirded.
He moved from, just for the season, I think, 6 months, he's going to be in Florida.
Right.
Down in the Tampa area. And let's see what Ray's enjoying today, shall we?
Yes.
Let's have a live look in at Tampa, Florida weather, ladies and gentlemen. Tim will type that in, my Weather Channel app, and see what we're dealing with in Tampa. As they brace themselves for another. In Tampa, Florida, right now it's 76 and partly cloudy. Now, if
currently, here this
look
morning,
at that. Tell me that's fair.
76.
76.
Chance of rain. Yeah, go ahead and tell our listeners what the chance of rain is. 0%.
0%. I mean, that Florida does get a lot of rain. Now, if our brother Ray was back home, where he was, where he's supposed to be suffering for the Lord, in Kansas City, MO.
Yeah.
Actually, he's on the Kansas side. It's 23.
Yeah. Wow. 2376.
No wonder he moves. No wonder he moves for the winter. No wonder people become snowbirds.
Oh.
I used to mock snowbirds when I was growing up,
right.
living up in New England.
Yeah.
We'd mock the people we knew who would go down to Florida for the winter.
Little weenies?
The little weenies. And now I'm just going, man, I should shut my mouth.
Now I know what they were doing. Right?
Absolutely.
All right. Well, anyway, winter is here. And as I said, Christmas is just 24 days away. When does the, you gentlemen may or may not know this, when does the Advent calendar begin for, you know, is, do you know this?
When does, yeah, I'll check.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
For the Advent calendar, I should
When does
know.
Advent start, 2025? Oh, it started yesterday.
Okay.
This date marks the first Sunday of Advent, which is the fourth Sunday before Christmas Day, and is determined by the liturgical calendar.
The
season lasts for 4 weeks, concluding on Christmas Eve, December 24th.
Okay. Well, this is a big celebration for Christians around the world coming up, the birth of Jesus Christ. And we're going to be doing our part here at American Family Radio to lead up to that special day.
When I was getting ready this morning, I was listening to Christmas music.
Oh, were you?
I told my wife I had to go in and get some water or something, and I said, I hope you like Christmas music. I said, because you're about to get an earful for 30 days or whatever the number of days.
Actually, sometimes in June or July, I'll punch in some Christmas music.
Ain't nothing wrong with that.
Well... Hallmark does it.
Yes. As does Cracker Barrel.
Cracker Barrel. Cracker Barrel starts there.
Hobby Lobby.
They start their Christmas sales in August. We're looking forward to Christmas. All right, Fred, bring us down. I've talked about the beautiful celebration around the Christmas time, and Fred's going to bring us back to human nature here.
Let me transition.
Okay.
All right. One more thing. Not so much weather related, but added to the problems of all the cancellations.
Yeah.
You guys heard about this?
The flight cancellations, yeah.
The Airbus 320 groundings. Have you guys?
I read about that. Tell us about it.
Well, apparently there is a piece of software on these Airbus 320s that was affected by solar flares, and it jigged things up. And they had to go in and make corrections. Now, there are about 6,000 of these Airbus 320s across the system. Most of the major airlines in the United States fly the 320s. So they had to ground them because it would have an impact, what it did to the software system, it would have an impact on perhaps a descent would begin when it wasn't called for by the pilots.
Oh, wow.
So, because these things are wired to the teeth now, all these airplanes, computers and everything. But they were able to, the engineers were able to fix it fairly quickly. But I've never heard of this before. A solar flare causing a problem with the software on an airplane.
Well, I knew that I had read about the unusual solar flare activity. I say unusual in terms of magnitude or whatever.
Yes.
And
break
of course,
it down for us, Ed.
Well, on social media, of course, there were all kinds of people predicting everything from the end of the world to, you know, the collapse of our the grid or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
It was nothing quite that dramatic. But were these planes that were in the air when the solar flare occurred, or when the radiation hit us, some of them were,
and others. Now they weren't all affected the same way. Somebody was telling me there was at least one incident where there was an uncalled for descent. Now it wasn't radical, but nonetheless, as a pilot, that would scare you.
Oh yeah,
you know that you weren't calling for something, and so anyway, the Airbus engineers have been able to apparently, for the most part, fix all of this. They kept the planes on the ground until they were sure it was fixed. It's just amazing. These engineers deserve a lot of credit. they know how to, you know, go in and scope the problem and get it fixed. But pretty scary when a solar flare can cause that kind of problem.
Well, and to answer Tim's earlier question about what a solar flare is, yeah. I think most of us know it's a relatively
break it down for us. Can you break
it's a relatively intense localized emission. Uh-huh. Of electromagnetic radiation in the sun's atmosphere.
You can read like nobody's business.
I can. And it can last from minutes to hours.
Yeah.
There you have it.
Solar flare can. Yeah. Yeah. Well, all right. So, the Airbus company. That's
320.
Is that different? Airbus and Boeing
are different.
Are the two different companies, but they're the two largest manufacturers of. Commercial jets.
Yeah, Airbus is European based, but they have a big assembly plant in Mobile, Alabama.
Oh,
yeah,
good.
Yeah. Seriously,
make America great again.
I go through Mobile a lot. I don't know where is that.
Yeah, I don't think you can see it from the interstate.
Okay.
Yeah, but I have family members down in the South Alabama area, and they have neighbors who work. They're from Europe. And they're working at the Airbus plant there.
Okay. Yep. Didn't know that.
Yep.
All right. Next story.
Well, we had the tragedy last Wednesday of the shooting of these West Virginia National Guard, two soldiers. One has passed away. Another one is in critical condition. And the person who allegedly did the shooting, he was hit by gunfire. He is being treated in hospital in Washington, D.C. His name is Rahman Ullah Lakhanwal, Afghan refugee, who is living in Bellingham, Washington, and apparently drove all the way to Washington, D.C. To allegedly carry out this deed. So the finger pointing has begun as to how could this guy who did this deed, allegedly, who approved him to come to this country? Here's what we know, is that he was helping the CIA in Afghanistan. He was one of those that came out of, after that debacle of a withdrawal from Afghanistan, he was approved initially by the Biden administration. But, however, his final asylum approval came in 2023. All right. So, National Security Advisor Kristi Noem says this guy, she is saying he was radicalized here in the United States. Cut number one.
I will say we believe he was radicalized since he's been here in this country. We do believe it was through connections in his home community and state, and we're going to continue to talk to those who interacted with him, who were his family members, talk to them. So far, we've had some participation, but anyone who has information on this needs to know that we will be coming after you.
Also, Arkansas Senator Tom Cotton was interviewed about this morning, and he says the Biden administration was just simply too lax on vetting these Afghan partners coming into this country. Cut two.
I think clearly vetting standards for every person who's been admitted in the country, especially from countries of concern like Afghanistan, need to be revisited. When our military and our CIA goes around the world, they work with unsavory characters. It's a necessary part of the job. And they engage in some vetting of those characters. But that's very different from the standards that we would apply to vet someone to come to this country, to live in our communities, to have a family, and to ultimately become American citizens. And that's what the Biden administration got so wrong.
Now, the allegation is that the Biden administration basically rubber-stamped all these guys coming in from Afghanistan back in 2021. That's the allegation.
Do you want to comment first? Or do you want me to?
Well, you can. It doesn't matter. I know what I'm going to say. It can wait.
Okay, so that means me?
Yeah, go for it.
Well, okay, I'm reacting. I haven't thought a lot about this, but just I don't like that immediately after something like this happens, we make it political. Okay? It's Biden's fault. Well, if this fellow worked with the CIA in Afghanistan, then he deserved to come to America because otherwise he'd have been killed by the Taliban. Okay? So I don't have a problem. on that information alone, that's it. That's all I'm going on. He worked with the CIA to help our troops in Afghanistan. Then he would be at the top of the list on who we bring to the U.S., okay? So if that's the vetting process, did he help us, then I'm okay with him coming to the U.S., so I don't blame Biden or the Biden administration for what this guy did. This guy evidently lost his mind, all right? And it may have been some kind of religious, because Muslims do that from time to time. Okay, that's their history. That's how we would define it, lose their mind. They would say, no, I'm just acting out on killing the infidel. And so Allah's happy with me. That's why they yell Allah Akbar, God is great, while they're committing these acts of murder, for example, in this case, attempted murder. And he did murder one, and the other one may die, sadly, these National Guardsmen. So I only hold him responsible, the guy, the shooter. I don't hold Biden responsible. Now, you may have a case next week where you show me, well, the Biden administration was lax in their vetting process, and this guy committed some kind of criminal actions. So I just don't like, yeah, did we all saw, was it a debacle over there, our withdrawal in Afghanistan? Remember those people climbing on top of the airplane,
right.
Mm-hmm. And all that? They were scared to death.
Uh-huh.
Those people. Now we can't bring them all over here because they're scared of living under the Taliban. Who wouldn't be if you had been protected by American soldiers all these years? Which that's a whole separate argument. Should we have even been over in Afghanistan all those years? For what purpose and what reason were we really over there after we were able to get Bin Laden, which is why we went over there in the first place, wasn't it?
Also to deal with the Taliban, because they were allowing Al-Qaeda to train over there.
That's true. So anyway, that's my feelings on this whole matter. Go ahead, Ed.
Well, I agree with
you.
Yeah, and here's the thing. The Biden administration was actually criticized for not bringing enough of these people over to the U.S., after we started pulling out. Remember, all these people that work with the CIA, many of whom probably were executed because the Biden administration's withdrawal was a disaster, and we left stranded over there people who worked with us. Now, I'm just like you, Tim. I mean, you've got to vet these people. You don't want a fox coming in with the chickens.
Right.
You know, but this individual was apparently, according to Christy Nome, radicalized once he got here. So I don't know what proper vetting would have looked like. If
right.
he's pro-American right. when he's in Afghanistan,
right.
we bring him over here, and then he turns against us. I'm not sure you can blame the Biden administration for that. The Biden administration did a lot of bad things.
Right, right.
And not vetting people and just letting people across the border. We had people on the terror watch
right,
list
right.
coming across. So there's plenty to blame the Biden administration for, but I'm with you. Lock and Wall, or however you pronounce it, he's responsible for what he did.
Did this guy, did he fly across? He was in Bellingham, Washington, living.
My understanding is he drove.
He drove. That's
he
the
drove
report.
3,000 miles to do this.
Right.
That's alleged.
Yeah. That's a long way to think about what you're about to do.
Yes.
And why you don't know why.
And you don't think of Bellingham, Washington as being a large community, whether Afghans or a large Islamic community? It wasn't when I lived on the west. That was just about 30 miles south right. where I lived. So something has happened in Bellingham in the last 25 years. But I tell you, the other thing that's looking at right now is when you have large communities of Islamic immigrants.
Yeah.
You look at what's happening in Minneapolis right now with Somalis, with the charges being laid with regards to all kinds of fraudulent activity. There's controversies coming out of Dearborn, Michigan. A controversy over the loudspeakers, calls to prayer, and all this sort of thing. I think that's being looked at now more carefully. And it's the same thing in Europe. Europe is very concerned because they're not assimilating into the culture. So I think this incident is going to generate another investigation as to what happens when you get these, you know, there's controversy in Texas because a group of Islamic people want to start their own community. And there's concern about Sharia law being implemented.
The religion of Islam, those who are, I'm not talking about your what do you call them, nominal Muslims by culture, you know what I'm saying? Like we have nominal Christians, you know, your Sunday, your Easter, Christmas Christians, we call them. I'm not talking about those people. That's the kind of people you want.
For Muslims.
For Muslims. Yeah. You don't want them with, you know, sold out because Islam is incompatible with Western civilization, with democracy, with the values of the Judeo-Christian system of way of life.
Right.
Okay, put it that way. Islam is, that's the reason, again, you have to distinguish between the peaceful Muslims, and there are, that's the majority of them, but these, what we call radicalized, those really are the true adherents. They're the ones who get on their mats and pray five times a day and kneel toward Mecca and Medina or wherever Mecca, I think, is where they, because they, this is what happened to this guy. He that's what we call radicalized, where they view the infidel as the enemy of Allah, and it's their job to dismantle, to take out, to kill, in some cases, the infidel. And that pleases Allah. And that's undeniable in the Islamic religion. Look what's happening in Nigeria, for example, right now. You have these Muslim terrorists, and they're slaughtering the Christians. Why are they slaughtering the Christians? Christians aren't bothering them, really. It's because they view this as their to prove their dedication to Allah so they can have an afterlife of paradise. Is that a fair?
And the only way you're, as a Muslim, the only way you're guaranteed an eternity in heaven or paradise, the only way you're guaranteed is to die while doing jihad, is to be a martyr. Okay. Otherwise, you have to hope you are good enough, a good enough Muslim. So that drives people, especially young men, to consider going all the way.
That's why we had 9/11.
That's why we had 9/11. This is why my understanding is some of these so-called martyrs for Islam, when they die taking infidels with them, they often spend the evening or the week before sinning because they believe that one act of dying as a martyr gets them into paradise. Listen, I would just say two other things because I agree with what you guys are saying. The size of the community anymore, Fred, I'm not sure it matters if you have one fire-breathing imam in that community who is getting them all hepped up and fired up to do the proper devout Muslim thing. And I would also add that Muslims, to what you were saying, Tim, Muslims are generally peaceful as long as they're in a minority. Once they start building up numbers, I'm not saying they have to be a majority, but once their numbers grow, then they do things like, what was it? Was it in Europe somewhere where they interrupted the, maybe Belgium, where they interrupted the Christmas celebration with smoke bombs and everything like that? They, you know, started shouting, they're doing their chanting. So once their numbers grow significantly, and we have several places in the U.S. where this is true, man, it's Katie bar the door. Then they're telling Christians at city council meetings, you're not welcome here.
That's right.
Yeah, and they got trouble in Europe. Look, now and in the coming years, some have said Europe has fallen in terms of because of the vast immigration of Muslims into European countries. I don't know whether that'll you know, take, that'll really transpire or not, but it's a very dangerous situation there in Europe. We'll be back momentarily. Stay with us.
We're living in a time when truth is under attack. Lies are easy to tell, easy to spread, and easy to believe. But truth? Truth is costly. And nowhere is the cost greater than for mothers in crisis. When a woman is told abortion is her only option, silence and lies surround her. But when she walks into a preborn network clinic, she's met with compassion, support, and the truth about the life growing inside her. That moment of truth happens through a free ultrasound, and it's a game changer. When a mother sees her baby and hears that heartbeat, it literally doubles the chance she'll choose life. Preborn Network clinics are on the front lines, meeting women in their darkest hour, loving them, and helping them choose life and sharing truth. Friend, this is not a time to be silent. It's a time for courage, for truth, for life. Just $28 provides one ultrasound and the opportunity for a mother to see her baby, to help her choose truth and life. Donate today. Call pound 250 and say baby. That's pound 250 baby. Or give online at preborn.com/AFR. That's preborn.com/AFR.
This is Today's Issues. Email your comments to comments@AFR.net. Past broadcasts of Today's Issues are available for listening and viewing in the archive at AFR.net. Now, back to more of Today's Issues.
Hey, welcome back, everybody, to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. Thanks for listening to the program, Today's Issues. I'm Tim with Ed and Fred. Today's December the 1st, and we hope you had a wonderful Thanksgiving celebration and looking forward to Christmas. Speaking of which, guys, Ed, I know you go back to the break room during the during our 3-minute break right there.
Yeah.
4-minute break. Fred usually stays in here and holds down the fort.
Right.
I go back with you to get a refill of coffee.
Yeah.
Which, by the way, has shown to make you live longer. Did you know this?
I didn't.
Yeah, 4 cups. I think they said two or three cups, something like that, a day. If you believe the surveys and the research.
I don't.
Okay, well, that's...
Because you know, I don't like coffee.
You know, the Nile's just not a river in in Egypt.
In Egypt.
anyway, but what I want to say is, it has begun in the break room, as it does every December. Did you notice the sweets that they put out there in front of us?
Oh, no, I did not look. Yeah, well, no, look. It gets bad.
At the top of the hour during the news break,
yeah,
go look.
I will.
Because... what do you call people who tempt other people in the Christian world?
Is it maybe Satan?
Okay, well, then we got food Satan back there. And they got all these sweets out, hoping that we'll all pack on about 10 pounds and can't fit in our pants in January. What's happening.
And we do what's called healthy you here. We,
we do.
All year round,
right,
until
healthy
November,
you.
The middle of November, we encourage people to be healthy, eat right, and then from the Thanksgiving week, but really, like you said, at Christmas, and I think a good portion...
We do like Catholics at Mardi Gras.
Yes.
Right here, don't we? Don't we?
Yes. Well, what's more insidious is that I think some of these sweets and things that appear are people dumping their stuff here so they don't eat it at home.
Yeah.
Causing right. others to stumble.
Anyway, there's just a whole, somebody brought them and said, here, eat them.
Yeah, a word of warning, do not have your healthy you in December 15th.
Yes.
Because your triglycerides will just be off the chart.
I know, mine's in January. But I glanced over there. I glanced over there, and there was those chocolate-covered pretzels. They're 20 feet away. They're 20 feet away, and I wanted to get 3 of them, but I didn't have time to eat them. So that's so it saved
me. Never stopped you before.
I know, but
it
did. I had to get back to the microphone here. So, but I still got the 5-minute news break coming up at the top of the hour.
And plus, we have popcorn back there.
Well, popcorn doesn't hurt you, I don't think.
Oh, it doesn't? Okay.
I don't think that puts weight on you.
All right.
It's
mostly air.
We've been eating diet pumpkin pie.
Oh, diet?
No, I'm kidding.
Oh. Well, you know, maybe you're using Splenda or something.
Costco. There was a news story in the last few days. Costco made 6 million pumpkin pies for Thanksgiving. 6 million.
Wow.
I know Sam sells them too.
Are those big? Let me just ask you, is pumpkin pie, when I grew up, pumpkin pie up in New England was huge. Okay, is it big down here in the South?
It's well, yeah.
All right, I didn't know
six
that.
6 million of them, and it's a loss leader.
Yeah,
okay. $6 for a big pumpkin pie.
It's just to get you in the store.
Oh yeah.
As a Southerner, lifelong,
yeah.
I could tell you, any kind of pie, any kind of pie will
be devoured. Here. Yeah,
But yeah, sweet potato pie. Apple pie, peach pie. Oh, that's my favorite.
Y'all don't have custard pie down here, though, do you?
Yeah, but I don't see it much.
Yeah.
Custard pie. You like custard pie, do
well,
you?
I did growing up. Whatever my grandparents brought when they came to visit, Dunkin' Donuts, I've said this before, Dunkin' Donuts is a New England brand from the Boston area. That's where it started before it went, regional to national. My grandparents on my dad's side, my dad's grandparents, when they would come to visit across the state line into Nashville, New Hampshire, before they came, they'd always stop at Dunkin' Donuts, and they'd bring pies. And I remember when donut holes were first a thing, because that blew my mind.
You mean Dunkin' Donuts sells pies?
Oh, yeah. Well, they had pies. The Dunkin' Donuts, no, they had the donuts, but they would stop at Dunkin' Donuts, bring donuts, and they stopped at a bakery.
If that wasn't enough.
Yeah.
Sweets. They wanted to make sure.
That's right.
Okay, we'll end this discussion right here, but I'll just tell you, you already got me thinking. The peach pie and the apple pie, hot, with a scoop or two of vanilla ice cream on top that melts. That'll make you cry.
Yeah. I'm just going to say, I don't know whether this is considered a terrible thing.
Yeah.
I prefer apple pie cold.
Yeah.
With ice cream.
Well, it's okay.
Yeah.
But a hot apple pie with some vanilla ice cream on top. Vanilla bean.
Yeah. No, that's good.
All right, Fred, back to the world of depressing news. We go back to the news desk. And
you're holding on by your fingertips, Tim, trying to stay with the good news.
That's why we're here. Go ahead, Fred. What's next?
All right. While the rest of us were eating turkey and pumpkin pie, negotiations are continuing with our Secretary of State, Marco Rubio, trying to bring an end to this Russia-Ukraine war. Actually, on the weekend, Marco Rubio invited a delegation of Ukrainian officials down to Florida, and they met there. We have a little bit from Marco Rubio here, cut 10.
We had another very productive session building off Geneva, building off the events of this week. As I told you earlier this morning, our goal here is to end the war. But it's more than just to end the war. We don't just want to end the war. We also want to help Ukraine be safe forever. So never again will they face another invasion. And equally importantly, we want them to enter an age of true prosperity.
And President Trump says a deal is possible, but it's tricky. Cut number 9.
I've spoken to them and they're doing well. Ukraine's got some difficult little problems. They have some difficult problems, but I think Russia would like to see it end, and I think Ukraine would like to see it end. I think that there's a good chance we can make a deal.
Now,
go ahead. God bless President Trump. I know he wants to end the war, but I don't know what to believe by what he says anymore, because he changes every week on his predictions and his analysis and what this side needs to do, what that side needs to do. Maybe Marco Rubio is a more authoritative voice right now on this than President Trump. Is that fair?
I'll just toss this in. I think President Trump, he has said this a number of times, that I think we're close to a deal. I think President Trump says that because, in his mind, this is a fair deal. But that isn't always what Putin or Zelensky want. And so I think that's part of the frustration.
I mean, when he acts as if he's speaking for them after having negotiated something, and it turns out that's not true.
Yeah.
Anyway, go ahead, Fred.
Well, and I think where we are right now is There's a lot of pressure on Ukraine from the United States to accept, to a certain extent, giving up that some big chunk of territory in the eastern part of the Ukraine, because I don't think Putin's going to move off that at all. But I think what Trump is trying to do, what I understand from what I've read, is tell Ukraine, look, if you give up that chunk of land in the east, we will come in and enhance your economy. The Ukrainian economy will be strong again. And I think there is an element, we will work to ensure your security. The question is Ukraine ready to accept that promise of security that Putin won't try the same thing again a few years from now? That's where it seems to be.
And my understanding is that area, I think they call it the Donbass.
Yeah.
That it's got a lot of minerals, and also, so it's a lot of mineral wealth there, but also it's a significant part of the wheat producing agricultural sector of Ukraine. There's other places in Ukraine that produce all that, but that Donbass region would be hard for Ukraine to lose, which is why, to your point, Fred, that what Marco Rubio and others are trying to encourage Ukraine to do is, we will help you make the rest of Ukraine a wealth producer.
Right. But what I'm more concerned about, this Ukrainian-Russia war may be going on 2 years from now. I mean, we don't know. It doesn't look to me like it's going to end anytime soon, especially with the Ukrainians. I mean, they just bombed the heck out of the Russian oil facilities over there. That's going to cause oil prices to go up in the region. It sounds like to me there the Ukrainians are like, we're going to go down in a blaze of glory. But
the Russians are still attacking too. They're still attacking Kyiv.
Oh yeah, 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 yeah. Oh drones, yeah. I didn't mean to suggest that the Ukrainians were wrong in their retaliation. I'm just saying the Ukrainians are not backing down either. Here.
Right.
They're fighting. But what's more concerning to, I think, a lot of Americans is what's going to happen with Venezuela, and what that means, because you're talking about a country in our hemisphere, right?
Yeah.
Isn't that true?
At the northern part of South America.
Yeah. So because now we have the president of the United States, Trump, telling Maduro, the president, put that in quotations, he's the dictator, really, of Venezuela, and has wrecked that country.
Yep.
And he's telling him he's got to go.
Yeah.
Regime change is what Trump's after.
Apparently, I'm not sure. But apparently Trump dialed up Maduro last. They actually had a telephone conversation. Trump has confirmed the conversation, but he doesn't want to talk about it. Cut number 8.
The New York Times reported that you had a phone call with Maduro. Did you?
I don't want to comment on it. The answer is yes.
And can you tell us a little bit?
No, I can't do that.
Mr. President,
would you say it went well?
No, I wouldn't say it went well or badly. It was a phone call.
Now, the report is that the Trump administration is offering Maduro and his family safe passage out of there, out of Venezuela. Regardless, I think most people believe, and Senator Tom Cotton of Arkansas is one of those people, he says Maduro has to go. Cut number 7.
As long as Nicolas Maduro is in power in Venezuela, you're going to continue to see the risk not only of violence in Latin America, but the drugs that I've heard so much about from Arkansas sheriffs and police chiefs that are threatening our communities and that are killing our kids. Nicolas Maduro needs to go. That's what President Trump has made clear. I think that's probably what he told him last week on the phone. I'm sure that the Cuban intelligence services in Venezuela and Russian generals are urging him to stay. But if he knows what's good for him, like so many other Latin American strongmen over the years, I think that it's time for him to go.
Are we going to take him out?
I think Trump's trying to avoid that. I don't think Maduro is one of those kinds of guys who's going to, you know, stay to the bitter end. Listen, this is a gamble for President Trump. Okay, and I'll tell you why. If they can get rid of Maduro fairly painlessly and not have to attack Venezuela. Certainly don't want a lot of boots on the ground. With minimal destruction, if Maduro will leave and Venezuela can have free and open elections finally, and they can vote and get rid of the communists, which is what I think the Venezuelan people want, then it's a win for President Trump. If we wind up in some sort of protracted conflict and Venezuela lucks out and sinks a ship or something like that, then I think President Trump is going to get in more trouble with his base, because he promised not to have America involved in foreign wars. And if it looks like we're stuck in another foreign war, the American people who voted for Trump, increasingly frustrated at the fact that the economy is not doing better, they're going to say, what do we care about Venezuela? You should be fixing prices in the U.S. Rightly, fairly, or not, I think that's the risk.
Let me ask you this, Fred and Ed. Senator Cotton there from Arkansas, who I have a lot of respect for, he's making the argument that drugs, illegal drugs coming from Venezuela are a legitimate reason to remove Maduro, right?
Yes.
Is that his proper name, last name?
Maduro.
Yes.
Maduro. Do you buy that?
That it's the primary reason?
That alone would be the reason.
No.
I don't know if that would be a fair characterization of what Senator Cotton would say himself. I'm just going on the clip. He said destabilization in the region, but he said, talking to Arkansas sheriffs and so forth, that drugs coming from Venezuela are a real problem.
That's part of it.
Okay.
I think there's a number of other things. Maduro's a bad guy. Okay.
Is he a threat to the U.S.?
I don't think anybody except maybe China or Russia with nukes are a threat to the stability of the United States. I think we got our own problems. We're doing that to ourselves. But Maduro is an enemy of the United States. I think he loves helping to flood the United States with drugs. I think he probably is a sponsor of instability in the region, but he also cozies up to Russia and China. And I think part of what the military is telling Trump is, we can get rid of Maduro because China and Russia are becoming entrenched in South America via Venezuela.
But you're saying that that's not going to work with the America First constituency of President Trump in terms of...
Not if we're there for 3 months. Not if we're there in a battle. You know, if we have Marines going door to door, you know, in Venezuela somewhere, fighting...
Like we chased down Gaddafi?
Yeah, I don't think that's going to go over well. This has to be, if we're going to do it, it has to be quick. I like the idea of promising Maduro, look, we'll give you safe passage. You go anywhere you want with all the money you've stolen.
Exile.
Yeah, you're exiled. And I didn't mean to hog the time, Fred. What do you think?
Well, there's another factor. There's a Florida Republican congresswoman last week who's saying Maduro has to go, not only because of the drugs, but also Venezuela is right up there with Saudi Arabia when it comes with oil.
Right.
If the United States was able to extract Maduro from the conversation, Fox News does a lot of interviews with the opposition leader in exile right now. She's in hiding because she's scared to death. Her life is in danger with Maduro. But if they put her in place, that would mean she would be a strong ally of the United States and would also push out Russia and China out of that influence. So I think oil is part of the equation here.
That's a good point. And President Trump has said that as well.
Yep.
All right. You're listening to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. Tim, Ed, and Fred. So we'll see what happens in the coming days with respect to Venezuela. Next story, Fred.
Well, we all know that next year's midterm elections, but it is election eve right now in Tennessee. And it's normally these elections wouldn't draw a lot of attention, but boy, this one is.
Is it a special election?
It's a special election for a congressional seat that has been held strongly by Republicans. And one of the reasons it's getting a lot of attention is the Democrat. The polling is kind of showing that it's neck and neck right now. The woman who is on the ballot for the Democrats, her name is Afton Benn. Now, you may have heard some of the stories. In the past, she has said she hates Nashville. She doesn't like country music. She's also talked about, defunding police. So she was asked about all this, believe it or not, on CNN. Let's see how that interview went. Cut five.
I want to ask you about an attack line that, from Republicans, because this is a comment you made in 2020 about Nashville. It's gotten a lot of attention in your race. Let's listen to this.
I hate the city. I hate the bachelorettes. I hate the pedal taverns. I hate country music. I hate all of the things that make Nashville, apparently, and its city to the rest of the country. But I hate it.
I know you said those comments were taken out of context, but I want to ask you about it, because I'm wondering, do you think it was a mistake to say that?
Once again, I was a private citizen. Nashville is my home. Do I roll my eyes at the bachelorette parties and the pedal taverns that are blocking my access to my house? Yeah, every Nashvillian does. But this race has always been something bigger. It's about families across Middle Tennessee that are getting crushed by rising prices, while Washington politicians and billionaires argue about this type of nonsense. And so, once again, I've been steadfast and dogged in my message about addressing the affordability crisis in Tennessee. And like I said, the race is close because that is what I've been doing.
That's a good answer.
Yeah,
that's a good answer, because it's a good sidestep, and I'm sure she's got.
It's a good answer, not answer. Is that what you're saying?
Well, it's. I'm sure she had consultants when this video surfaced of her saying all the stuff she hates about Nashville. I'm sure she got with her little group, and they said, "Hey, this is what you need to say." The first thing you do is you make a little light of it a little bit. Yeah, who likes the traffic? Who likes this? But then you appeal to some of the frustrations of other people in Nashville. I don't like them blocking my road. That kind of thing. And now you've disarmed it. You've diffused it. Let me put it that way. But that second part, when she says this is what the election is about, this is what we're going to hear from now to the midterms.
Yep.
Is the American family and the kitchen table that they're being crushed by economic pressures. They can't get their head above water. President Trump promised. Republicans promised this, and they promised that.
What?
Well, they promised lower prices, lower food prices. The expectation was, and I'm not blaming anyone, I'm just saying you don't get elected in January and automatically cause prices to drop, grocery prices, for example. But gasoline prices have been dropping steadily. And I think the expectation was and is that will contribute to a lowering of prices because it doesn't cost as much to ship products to stores. I'm not sure, but the grocery stores aren't holding on to every cent they can themselves by keeping prices elevated, maybe a little bit of price gouging, taking advantage of how high prices were when COVID started, now here 5 years, almost 6 years later. But that, what she just said, that's a winning message, especially among young voters in this country. And when it's hard for you to buy a home, rent a home, get a job, I've seen stories all over the media all over the weekend. Young people right out of college, I can't get a job. They're going to look to the party in power and the party represented by whoever's in the White House, which is why usually the party in power loses seats during the midterms. All the promises you made to get elected, you better bring them to pass, or the frustration is taken out on you in the midterm.
It was very interesting to your comments, Ed. Nikki Haley's son was interviewed on Fox this morning. He looks about in his 20s. And he says the Republican Party is not listening to people his age, the Gen Z. And he says they are the ones that can't buy houses. They're coming out of college, they can't find jobs. Now, he is not an advocate for socialism, but he says the socialism message is selling well with that demographic. those in their 20s, 30s, that sort of thing. It was very, very interesting interview. Steve is going to do a story using his interview this morning on Fox, but it was fascinating. He is not a liberal, but he is saying the Republican Party is not listening to that constituency, and that is going to cause them problems. And I tell you what, if the Democrats win this seat in Tennessee tomorrow.
Deep red
seat. Now, Nashville is changing too.
That's true.
That's another part of the political equation there. Nashville is changing, especially the East End, they say, of Nashville is becoming very pro-Democrat.
Well, there's a lot of people fleeing blue states.
Yes.
And blue cities elsewhere.
Yeah.
And Nashville, Dallas, Atlanta.
Yep.
Those places are becoming popular, and you can see changes.
Yep.
Well, we'll see what happens. I still think the Republican will win there, but we'll see if that'll shock the world, so to speak, the political world, if she's able to pull off a win, against in a red district.
Yep.
Where is that? So that's outside of Nashville or downtown Nashville? Do you know where that district is?
I'm not sure. I believe it is in the Nashville area.
Yeah. So she hates country music.
Yep. That's what she said.
She's running for office in Music City, USA.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, but when their prices are high and their expenses are high.
And that's Republicans' fault, huh?
No, I'm just saying that's the message. That's going to be the message. And love or hate of country music isn't going to matter, I don't think.
Yeah. Well, I hope she has some friends in low places because... She's going to need them to beat a. You see what I did there?
Yeah.
We'll be back in 5 minutes with more of today's issues on the American Family Radio Network.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.